Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of your favorite YouTube channel and podcast. Hashtag KTFC Sports Talk with your host, Justin P. This is episode 186 for the YouTube channel, for the audio version, season 5, episode 15. You can check that out on Spotify, Apple, Google Play Store, Google Podcast, I'm sorry, Anchor, Spotify, basically anywhere you get your music and podcast stuff from. Just type in hashtag KTFC Sports Talk, and then list all the available platforms. Today, got a special guest, up-and-coming defensive guru. You know, he's a defensive back specialist. So that's everyone that's welcome to the show. Bluefield State defensive coordinator, Coach Lawrence Robinson.
Hey man, appreciate you having me on. I don't know about defensive back guru or specialist and none of that kind of stuff. I don't know about all that, but I'll take the compliment though.
Yeah, I gotta give you your flowers, Coach. So you already know we're gonna get to some Q&A. So you ready?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, sir. All right, question one. What TV show or TV series are you currently binge watching right now?
I'm on Chicago Med. I think that's it. Yeah, Chicago Med. Yeah. It's good. I think I started like last week and I'm on like season 4, season 5, something like that. So I'm rolling. So I'm all into it. So
okay, just that, nothing else?
Nah, nothing else right now. When I really get on the show, I'm kind of just focused on that show.
Move to the next one. That's how I am.
Yeah. Once I'm in the show, I'm with that show, and then I'll move on to the next one. So right now, Chicago Med. Our camp starts in 12 days, so I'm probably going to try to knock through Narcos Mexico again. I watched it like 3 times, but I'm going to probably watch that again. Just on my downtime, you know, just on the couch chilling, just watching that.
I got you. Okay, that's definitely a good one, though. But all right, question two: give me your top 5 favorite movies of all time. This is your favorite, Yep. Movie.
So Goodfellas is my number one movie of all time. I'm definitely a mob mafia guy, so that's my number one movie of all time. Number two is really reserved for just one person. That's Denzel. Anything Denzel Washington is in, I'm a fan of. He ain't never disappointed. You know, he ain't never disappointed. So
you're right. That's the GOAT. That's like the Michael Jordan of acting. You're right.
No question. So anything with him is that's gonna be my number two. My number three movie is Paid in Full. Love that movie. You know, I got it downloaded on my phone. I got the DVD. So anytime I need to watch it, I can watch it. So that's probably my number three. Friday Night Lights, that's probably my number four movie of all time. And then number five, shoot, I don't know. Number five, probably the original Ninja Turtles movie. That's my number one.
That's my favorite growing up as a kid. Yeah.
You know, I got the DVD probably like 5 or 6 years ago, and then you know stuff that you know as you get older, it don't really resonate when you like 5, 6 years old or whatever. But now you know that movie kind of resonates with some stuff. You know, like you know he dude swinging the bat and he was like a Jose Canseco bat. He was like, tell me you didn't pay for this. You know, like stuff like that is like hilarious.
Casey Jones, my guy.
Yeah, Casey Jones. So yeah, so that's probably my number five movie of all time. Yep.
Okay. All right. Question three. Give me your top 5 music artists that you like. I could be R&B, rap, soul, whatever. It don't matter the particular category.
Yeah, gotta be Michael Jackson. You know that one's a given. You know, I think whatever, you know, all of his stuff was just fire. All of his stuff. So Michael Jackson, old Lil Wayne. You know, when I was actually talking to my sister about it the other day. You know, like when he was dropping his mixtapes, like his mixtapes was unchallenged. They was better than the mainstream stuff. You know, dedication to like all that stuff was pure fire. Drake is obviously like, you know, he's the GOAT. You know, he's one of the best.
He definitely, when it's all said and done, he's going to be in that conversation for sure.
Yeah, he is. You know, and my homeboy, Dion, he lives in Chicago, and you know, he listened to Drake's new album and he was like, yo, you listen to it? And I was like, nah, I was like, I ain't listening to it. I was like, I heard about it. And people kind of like, you know, it's like, oh, he about to go on a European tour. So it's really meant for them. So I really hadn't listened to it. But, you know, when Drake was coming up and he was out for blood, like, dude was, it was a no brainer. So yeah, so Drake for that. Shoot, 4 and 5. Probably say Earth, Wind, and Fire. Earth, Wind, and Fire. You know, I grew up obviously like with my dad. You know, he's from the country, so he's more of an old school music kind of guy. Slash, like, you know, Run DMC and all that kind of stuff. So I came up with the oldies and goodies with him. So I'd probably say Earth, Wind, and Fire. And then number 5, I would probably say, Boosie. Yeah.
That's good. Hey, that's a main list. I can't argue with that. Yeah. All right, question 4, your favorite food or snack?
My favorite snacks is anything with dessert. I'm a big dessert guy. So any kind of pound cake or cobbler or, you know, fudge rounds, like anything that's, you know, chocolate, anything like that. I'm a big sweet guy. You know, I could eat nothing all day, but eating a bunch of junk food, which, you know, after a while I start catching up to you. So luckily camp coming up. So I'm going to be outside getting about 20,000 steps all day and sweating and all that kind of stuff. So I'm a big sweet guy. And then, you know, obviously soul food, you know, fried chicken and mashed potatoes and collard greens and mac and cheese, you know, cornbread, like, and then my mama's sweet tea. You know, that's unmatched. My mama's sweet tea. So, yeah.
Hey, that sounds great to me. So,
yeah.
Question 5: what activities you like to partake in when you're not working?
I really kind of be at the house. I really kind of just be chilling. You know, I've done the club scene and the bar scene and all that stuff. So I'll do that every now and again, but, you know, now I'm just kind of wanting to come home and just kind of hang out at the house and just have a peace of mind, you know, just having peace and quiet. You know, my fiance asks me every year what I want for my birthday. And I say, I just want to come home and have peace and quiet. So, you know, sometimes just hearing nothing is the best, or, you know, just being able to, you know, put Netflix on or Hulu or go on YouTube and put a game on and just not even watching it as a coach, just watching it just as a regular fan. So that's probably, you know, what I like to do. You know, I want to get back into reading more. That's something I've said that I was going to do. So, you know, I'm pretty determined to kind of start that back up, start reading, you know, just different genres of books. You know, I'm kind of at a point now, obviously gotten older and more mature and, you know, working with the youth of tomorrow and the future, you know, trying to research, you know, on our people and where we come from and, you know, where we're headed and trying to install some of those roots in our guys. And, you know, I'm a history guy. So anytime I can dispel myths and falsehoods, I'm always trying to do that too. So.
Hey, that's amazing. Definitely reading is something I'm trying to get back into as well. Cause see, now with technology, we don't really pick up a good book nowadays like we used to. Yeah. Like everything, YouTube and all that stuff. But yeah, that's definitely something I would like to get back to. That was good, coach. All right, question 6. What's your dream vacation?
Dream vacation would probably either be going to Italy or going to Africa. I coached high school ball at Hargrave Military Academy. We had a couple kids over there from Africa, and, you know, they always took offense to seeing like commercials and, you know, Feeding the World type of commercial, infomercials and things like that. And they're like, yeah, there is some of that, but it ain't all like that, you know.
I tell everybody, coach.
Exactly.
Two parts. Remember, coming to America, you got that part with the
rich.
You got the little parts, like, you know, little Haiti and all that might not be as fortunate. So that's right. What I say. It's every country has its good and bad. So
100%. So yeah. So yep.
No, that's good. That's I like those. All right, the last question is everybody's favorite. If you can have dinner with five guests, dead or alive, famous and non-famous, who are you gonna have dinner with?
Denzel Washington, obviously we covered that, you know, with his movies and his work, but also, you know, just having the opportunity to watch interviews that he's done, you know, shows that he's more than just a simple actor. You know, he's got wisdom and he's got experience. So definitely would love to have a sit down with him. Michael Jackson as well, you know, not only just for his musical talents, but, you know, the fact that he was able to do the investments and buying what he was able to buy, just his business mind. I think people don't really realize how smart that dude was and, you know, how much money he had and what he was able to do with that money. I definitely would love to, you know, have a sit down with him from that perspective. Number three would be Malcolm X. I think, you know, obviously when you bring up like Martin Luther King and Malcolm X obviously gets the bad rap in it, but I think that, He is someone I would definitely love to sit down with, you know, just through his transformation, you know, starting out with the passing of his father and everything that he went through and going to jail and, you know, pretty much being like a pimp and then, you know, kind of transitioning from when he first entered the Nation of Islam to kind of how he ended things. So I definitely would love to have a sit down with him as well. Number four and five. I'm a conspiracy guy. So anybody that can help me kind of dispel some conspiracies, that's who I want to sit down with. You know, I got plenty of questions, you know, obviously about like Adolf Hitler and, you know, JFK and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. Like I got some real, I'm a big conspiracy guy. So anybody that could really help me get those questions answered. So that would probably be four and five. Those would probably be the biggest ones.
Got you. Give me 1 second, Coach, because your mic breaking up. Hold on 1 second.
Okay.
Okay, you should be good now. Okay, you get that was five, Coach?
Yeah, I don't know if I have a five. You know, I don't want to be cliche and
like Michael Jordan or anybody like that. No, you know, I'm just throwing
stuff. Yeah. I don't really have anyone outside of that. Yeah.
Okay. No family member, nobody. Like, you know, just like I said, that's why I say non-famous or famous. Don't gotta be all famous people.
Yeah. Not really.
We'll just say that open. Say that first by open for somebody.
Yeah.
You know, to pop me in mind. But all right, let's get right into it, man. So tell everybody, like, how you grew up, you know, where you grew up, and, like, how was your childhood and all that stuff like that.
Yeah. So I'm from the eastern part of the state of Virginia and kind of like in that Tidewater, Richmond area. Small little town. Everybody knows each other type of deal. You know, my middle school teachers growing up, they either went to school with my parents or they taught my parents or my aunties and uncles. My dad's 1 out of 13. So, you know, everybody kind of knows the Robinsons. My mom's from D.C. She split time between Oxon Hill and then D.C. And then, you know, her father still lives up there. So me and my sister spent a lot of time up there on visits and things like that. So, yeah, man, it wasn't too much of my hometown. It's two stoplights and the biggest national chain restaurant in my hometown is Hardee's. You know what I'm saying? So you're going to have to drive 25, 30 minutes for everything. You know, the mall's an hour away. So, you know, I had a good childhood, but, you know, didn't play, you know, Pee Wee League football or nothing like that. Really all they had in the town was basketball and baseball at a young age. So that was kind of, you know, my childhood. I got a sister. She lives in Richmond now. She's got a little boy. He's five and he's every little bit of football. Like that's all he know. He already know how to get in a 3-point stance and all of that kind of stuff. So, so sports is big in my family. You know, went to a small little private high school where I played football and three other sports and then went to West Liberty, University in Wheeling, West Virginia, where I was a 2-year starter there at safety.
Okay. All right. So, what made you get into coaching?
So my pop started coaching, in our hometown. Like I said, the biggest thing we had was like rec league basketball. And that was like the thing to do. Like they had drafts and tryouts and all of that kind of stuff. So it was a big deal. So I came up around my dad coaching in that rec league, but he also coached high school track, particularly mostly with the girls. So, you know, most little kids, they was, you know, in the spring, they was riding home to school and stuff like that on the bus. My dad was picking me up and he was taking me to track practice, you know. So at a very young age, I was going to state track meets and going to state, track practices and things like that with the high school kids. And so, you know, I remember one time I asked my pops, I was like, well, you know, why do you coach? And he was like, you know, you giving back to your community. He was like, and that's just what you do. You know, he was like, it was guys that took time out of their lives to help coach me when I was playing basketball coming up. He was like, so now I'm doing the same thing. And so that kind of, you know, always kind of sparked me into wanting to get in the coaching, you know, being able to have that impact.
Oh, man, that's good, man. So what was your very first coaching job?
So my very first, unofficially, my very first coaching job was my dad's rec league team. I was a freshman in college, maybe a sophomore in college. My dad had to work. And so he was like, you know, here's pretty much what you're going to do. And so unofficially, that was my first job. We ended up winning the game and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, I kind of like that feeling, being able to kind of, you know, we ran press the entire game. I don't know if he know that, but we pressed the entire game from the ones all the way to the backups. Everybody pressed. So, you know, I enjoyed having that feeling and things like that. And what was crazy was my uncle also coached on the same team, and their uncle, so my great uncle, coached on the same team. So it was all three of them coaching on the same team. So I enjoyed that. But my first official coaching job was a year after I got out of college. It was back at my high school. I coached the DBs, and I was the co-offense coordinator.
Okay, cool. So how was that like being an offensive coordinator and coaching the DBs? I know that, you know, you got the best of both worlds. So, you know, how was that like?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. You know, obviously DBs is what I've known for a very long time. So that part was easy. But, you know, at our school, you know, 30 kids on the team. So everybody's going both ways, offensively and defensively. So so that was, you know, that was pretty interesting. Because at the time I was kind of really split, you know. It was kind of like my job to put points on the board, you know, along with my head coach, but then also, you know, trying to lock wide receivers up. So it was pretty interesting. I think what helped me was being able to know what's going on both sides of the ball. Obviously, you know, being an OC, all right, this is what defenses are trying to do and how do I counter that? And then, you know, vice versa, obviously, you know, with the DBs. You know, we were pretty talented, so we ran a lot of cover one and cover three. So that kind of made it easy from that regard. But I enjoyed offense coordinator. Putting up points was that was fun. That was interesting.
Gosh, how many points per game did you guys average?
I couldn't remember. You know, at this time, spread really still wasn't really a kind of a thing. I'm gonna say maybe 20 plus. You know, at that point, you know, we were pretty good. We were pretty talented, had a pretty good little quarterback. You know, I just couldn't get him that touch that he needed on the deep balls. You know, we had like three receivers that were 6'3" and above, and just couldn't get him that touch for the fade ball. Because I'm like, look, just give him a shot, let him go get it, and they'll do the rest. They'll make you look good, and we could never get it. So so it could have been more, but yeah.
Hey man, that's good. So all right, after that, so what made you transition to like, all right, now I'm going to strictly be on the defensive side of the ball?
So really, when I coached high school ball, I was both ways. You know, high school staffs, you know, they're not overly big, and then, you know, your teams aren't going to be big enough to where you just got set sides. So I was always coaching on both sides of the ball. It wasn't until I decided to be a quality control coach at William and Mary, where I was just strictly, you know, strictly on defense.
Okay. All right. So like what are you, a 4-3 guy, 3-4 guy? You don't got to get too in deep into it. I don't want you to give away no secrets, but I'm just saying, like, what is your basic philosophy for us defensively?
Aggressive, talk trash, lock you up. No, but you know, for me, the benefit of coaching high school football, you know, you really had to be flexible and you had to be multiple. So, you know, like right now I'm working on two different playbooks, you know, just based off of, yeah, we recruited, but we don't know what we're going to get until these guys get on the field with our freshmen and things like that. And so, you know, being a high school coach, you know, year in and year out is all right, what we got this year, and then being able to morph it into that. I'm not one of those coaches that's going to try to take a square peg and put it in a round hole. All right, this is what I got. So now we got to adjust to what our players can do. I just found out that it's just simpler when you do that, you know, allowing your guys to be put in the best position based on their skill sets. You know, some guys right now, they might be a safety right now, but they might end up being like an outside linebacker just because that's what's best for their skill set and that's what we need. And vice versa. Some guys might be a corner. They might get moved to safety. You know, that's just my personal philosophy, is being able to adapt and adjust based on my guys. So, you know, like week one of this year, we'll be a four down team. And week two, we're going to be a three down team in camp, just to see what our guys can do and how we fit it. So.
Okay, that's pretty good, man. So, like, what do you look for in like, positional players? So I'm going to start the DB, since that's especially – what do you look for in the corner? Like, when you're recruiting a guy to come play corner for you, what do you look for?
You know, the first thing I always ask is if a kid can play. You know, I've seen and been a part of, you know, certain different situations where, you know, if the kid don't meet the measurable, then it's an automatic swipe, which is fine for their philosophy. My first question is, can he play? And then once he plays, all right, then what's going on after that? So, like, for a corner, you got to be fluid. You got to be smooth. You got to have good hip – or not good hips. You got good ball skills. You know, you got to be a really good communicator. You can't be quiet. Not playing for me. You know, a quiet defense is a dead defense, for me. So you got to be able to do that. Got to be able to make plays on the ball. You know, the offense is only going to give you certain many opportunities to make plays on the ball. So we got to capitalize on those ops. And then for me, a non-negotiable is tackling. I know that, you know, yeah, it's a non-negotiable for some people.
You can't play defense if you can't get nobody on the ground. It don't matter.
Yeah. 100%, especially in today's game where it's so spread out and one missed tackle could be six. You know, if we were still in like the pro style type of offense or wing T and things like that, then, you know, you could kind of overcompensate for them things, but got to be able to tackle. You know, again, I play safety, so, you know, I treat my corners like safeties in some regards, and tackling is one of those deals. This past year, we had a couple of guys, they had to kind of find that out the hard way, where it was, you know, they thought they was going to go out there biting ankles and all that stuff, and they learned pretty quickly. So after that, you know, from a corner perspective, we didn't have too many issues in terms of tackling.
All right, so what about the safeties, your deep guys? What boxes they got to check out for you?
Got to be able to cover ground, you know, going from at least at a bare minimum sideline to hash. Same thing. I want my guys to be aggressive, you know, when it comes to tackling, you know, the days of being able to take somebody's helmet off and things like that we could do in our day, you know, you really can't do those things anymore. So those guys got to be able to tackle, and those guys also got to be able to cover. You know, for me, I like to kind of be, you know, flexible in what we do. And so if we got a guy that's strictly like a box safety or, you know, something like that, that really kind of hinders us. So, you know, I want my guys to be able to cover from a safety perspective. So I end up trying to do a lot of cross training with my guys, safeties and corners. I try to do a lot of cross training. I want those guys to be able to, you know, kind of at a bare minimum, all kind of have the same skill sets.
Yeah, because if you're going to all out blitz or going to cover zero, them guys got to be the man up. Got to be the kind of play the slot. You got to be able to play the tight end. You have to cover. They ain't just roam around, just flying around and just teeing off on people. Like, have to use some type of cover, like, you know what I mean? So safety, you a hybrid between a linebacker and a corner. Fail to realize that you're a hybrid. Like, you got to be able to come up and tackle like a linebacker, and you got to be able to cover.
100%.
Yeah, like, you know, I coach football myself, high school. Usually I tell I'm a defensive coordinator too. I got the same principle as you. You got to come up and tackle, and you got to read your keys. And like, can't just be one dimensional football. It's not going to work.
Yeah.
What about your line?
Last thing. Got to have good eyes if you're a DB. Bad eyes will get you beat.
All day long because you can't locate the football.
Yep.
But what about your linebacker core? Like, what boxes they got to check off?
They got to be elusive, you know, got to be quick twitch. You know, there's going to be times where, you know, those linemen are working their way up to you and you got to be able to get off blocks. Cause we all know, you know, at some point or another, when an offensive lineman get his hands on you, that's pretty much done. You ain't getting off of that. So you got to be able to get off blocks and, you know, we'll teach our guys different techniques, to avoid, you know, some guys are, you know, a little bit smaller and a little more elusive. They can bend underneath and things like that. Some guys, you know, they're really good with their hands. I got one kid or I got two kids. Them dudes, they're going to take it to the offensive lineman first. They're going to be like, nah, you ain't getting me first. So they'll hit those guys first and then shed off the block. So got to be elusive. And same thing, you know, they got to be able to run. You know, those guys got to be able to run sideline to sideline just with today's game. Still got to be, you know, good tacklers as well and good, really good communicators. They got to be also be able to think on the fly. Not every time is a defensive lineman going to be in a spot or the gap that he needs to be. So as I tell them, you know, as a linebacker, you got to be able to make a D lineman right. Just like a safety got to make a linebacker right, linebackers got to be able to make D lineman right. And so, all right, yeah, this dude's wrong. All right, let me get to his gap and make sure that we're gap Sam.
Yeah, because one misassignment, somebody, like I said, that's the difference between stopping somebody and giving up a first down or a touchdown, like, you know, shooting the wrong gap, or if you're doing like a shift and somebody don't shift over in time, it's just, yeah, so a linebacker, like especially the middle linebacker position, you got to be able to think. Yep. You're the quarterback of the defense, you got to make sure everybody's aligned, everybody know their assignment, you know, because if they don't, that's just going to make your job easy, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what about the defensive line, the big boys up front? What double boxes?
Yeah. What's that?
Your D-line. Like, what boxes they got to check out for you to be able to play on your D-line?
Yeah, I want those guys to be explosive, you know, explosive off the ball. And same thing, got to be able to be good with their hands. Obviously, being a DB guy, I'm not as familiar with what's going on up front. But, you know, as I've started to learn and kind of go through my career, you know, I know that being able to get off the ball is that's half the battle right there. And then after that, being able to have that hand placement, getting their hands on the offensive lineman first, you know, and then kind of being able to have some power either to string it along or, you know, to overpower that guy and kind of push him upfield and kind of, you know, make a little wall. Those are going to be the best things for the interior guys. And then, you know, for my defensive ends, I want guys that are, you know, they got good bend, they're elusive, and go get the quarterback. That's just me personally. You know, I want my DNs to be cut loose and want them to have to worry about one thing, which is going to go get the quarterback.
Yeah, like D-linemen, yeah, I think D-linemen nowadays are more athletes. They ain't just the big, fat 400 pounds. You look at Aaron Donald.
Yeah.
Looks like a fullback, and he out there getting 20 sacks a game. Then, like they specimens now. Like, I had Grambling, I don't know if you saw it, Grambling, offensive line coach one yesterday. Mm-hmm. He said, coach, man, we got nice, and now we got to block them guys, the Miles Garrett and the TJ Fox. Mm-hmm. These guys is running 4-3s, 4-4s, coming off the edge. Now, you kick him back, an old lineman, and this guy, 260 pounds, all muscle, running 4-4. He just get to just come, he come up foot field. Full speed, like those, like Khalil Max, Joey Bo, like them guys. Like he said, we got to block them guys, coach.
Yeah.
So, explain to people, like, they might not be as football savvy as me and you and other coaches. Like, why is it important to have a dominant pass rush? Explain that to them.
Yeah, having a good pass rush, you know, it makes life easier on the back end. You know, obviously, there's, you know, thought processes with. You know, if you got good DBs, it'll help the D-line and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I used to think like that, but now I'm more of a everything starts up front, you know, with the offense and defensive line. So when you got, defensive linemen or, you know, defensive ends that, you know, can wreak havoc on the quarterback, you know, that's what you want. That's what you got to have. Whether it's an experienced quarterback, you know, there's been a couple games where teams been getting after Tom Brady and, as he's someone that's seen it all. And, you know, quarterbacks don't like getting hit, you know, because now they start seeing ghosts. Is my protection really there, or do I really, you know, do I got to get rid of this thing quicker than what I want to? And sometimes it's not always just even hitting the quarterback. Sometimes it's just being able to make him feel you and make him get off of his pocket or his landmarks. I tell my guys, you know, offense is all about timing and rhythm. Offense linemen hear a play. If they know that it's quick, they're expecting the ball to come out quick. And if that ball ain't coming out quick, then somebody in the back end messed up. All right. Quarterbacks are expecting receivers to be at certain places at certain times. Receivers are expecting the ball to be somewhere at certain times. All right. But if the quarterback is having to think an extra second longer, or he's got to get rid of it quicker, well, now that disrupts the timing. You know what I'm saying? So again, not all the time is it having to hit the quarterback. Sometimes it's just making him feel you. Sometimes it's, you know, making that kid go to his left if he really can't throw while he's running to his left. Some guys are better stepping up in the pocket, making throws. Some guys are better out into the flats. And so
like
if you got
roll out, like the Kyler Murray's and Lamar's.
Yep.
And that's my next question. Like, how is it going against a dual threat quarterback as a D coordinator? And I know they're probably like, oh man, I got to make sure he don't take off and I got to make sure he don't pass. Like, how was that game planning for a specimen like that at quarterback?
Yeah, it's tough, you know, because though, like, I couldn't imagine having the game plan for Lamar Jackson, you know. So, yeah, obviously, there's going to have to be some times where it's just like your thought process is like, this dude is – he's going to make plays. You know, he's just going to make plays, and you got to live with that. And, you know, some coordinators out there or coaches out there, they want to stop everything. In today's world, it just ain't realistic. It just ain't realistic. So, you know, being able to find some weaknesses and, you know, being able to get after quarterbacks. You know, also, you know, trying to understand, all right, you got a dual threat quarterback, but is he really a better runner or is he a better thrower? You know, there's some guys that I'm going to make you throw this ball to beat me. And if you do, then you do. And then there's some guys that's, you know, they're dual threat, but they're really looking to throw first and run second.
You're just using their mobility to buy time. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, those are the kind of the cat and mouse games that you got to be able to do. You know, when you're game planning for dual threat quarterbacks, that's what I look for. All right, is he a runner? All right, is he running a run or is he running a throw to buy time? All right, he's a pocket passer. You know, all right, or is he really someone that really can't throw?
Gotcha. Like, explain to the importance now of like linebackers having to be in the covering space, because now, like you said, teams going to spread and all that. And then the tight ends are basically big body receivers. They're not the chubby guys that just an extra lineman that catch a three-yard pass. These guys like Kelsey's and all them in the world that can get up in them same. So explain the importance of having linebackers that can run. Like the guys like Devin White, Devin Bush, Patrick Queen, all those guys that can just – Deion Jones of the world, them guys that can just cover.
Yeah, obviously it helps. You know, with what you're trying to do schematically, you know, when you talk about the Travis Kelce's of the world, you know, those guys they're mismatches. You know, they're typically those guys are 6'4".
How forwards playing football.
Yeah. Yeah. Typically those guys are 6'4" plus, you know, 6'4", 6'5", 6'6". Well, generally speaking, that's probably going to be too big for a safety. Or depending on your safety.
Everybody don't have 5'6", 6'8". You're right.
Yeah, not everybody gonna have a Kyle Harrison.
You might got 10 of them out the entire NFL.
Yeah, yeah. Last time I checked, like average like DB height was like 6 foot, you know, 5'11", 6 foot, 6'1", whatever it may be. So that's a tough matchup against a dude that's 6'5", 6'6". But then also them dudes, they weigh 240, 250, 260, you know, like those are mismatch problems. So anytime that you can have a linebacker that got a little more thickness to him, but he can also run and kind of be physical with those guys and can run with those guys, you know, that allows your safeties to be, you know, having to focus on a running back or a quarterback, you know, just spot a quarterback, whatever it may be. So being able to have those guys, you know, that's a true blessing. I don't know if I got that right now, so I can't tell you how I feel. But, you know, maybe someday I'll be able to be like, yeah, hey, it's real nice being able to have a kid like that.
What are some defensive coaches that you admire and that you, like, looked up to? It could be college level, high school level, pro level. It don't matter.
Yeah, Charlie Strong. You know, I was coaching high school ball, and I was going to the Nike clinics and things like that. And I would go to, you know, maybe one or two. And, you know, where I was at, obviously being in Virginia, you know, going to the one in D.C. was always cool. And going to the one in Charlotte was always cool and things like that. But I remember one time it was David Shaw and Charlie Strong out at a coaching clinic, Nike coaching clinic in Oklahoma. And I was like, I'm going. I was like, I have an opportunity just to meet Charlie Strong and David Shaw. I was like, that was something that I couldn't pass up. And so, you know, being able to meet those guys was great advice and things like that. So I've always admired Charlie Strong, even back when he was a DC at Florida. You know, those defenses were just absolute filth. I'm talking about absolute filth. You know, you're talking about Ahmad Black and Major Wright and all of those guys. Like, don't do it. Yeah, man. Them dudes was killers out there, you know. It was killers out there. So Charlie Strong is you know, I'm a big fan of his, you know, wherever he goes. You know, as I said, you know, David Shaw, you know, obviously a big fan of his. You know, I'm a big Jim Harbaugh fan. I'm a Michigan fan, so I'm a big Jim Harbaugh fan in terms of what he's been able to do. I love what Don Brown does, you know, defensively. You know, he's someone that, you know, I've really enjoyed watching. And then, you know, very much like Rod, you know, stepping outside of football, you know, John Thompson, you know, old John Thompson, you know, watching what he was able to do. Chaney, that was at Temple, you know, watching those guys and what they were able to do, literally doing more with a whole lot less. And battling all the big boys, you know, those are guys that, you know, I've really admired as, you know, as a coach.
Yeah, so what about Nick Saban? You know, he's a defensive guru himself.
Yeah. You know, when you talk about Nick Saban and Belichick, yeah, those guys, I mean, shoot, man, the list can go on. You know, I'm always, you know, just mesmerized with what they're able to do schematically and things like that. You know, you throw in Kirby Smart. You know, Kirby Smart's a heck of a defensive guy as well.
Look what you did at Georgia, man. Them guys, man. Woo.
Yeah. Them kids play, man. Them dudes play. You know, what they able to do. Now, obviously, you know, the recruiting piece comes into it. You know, it's all about the Deons and the Davons. You know, it's all about who you got out on the football field, too. But because, you know, those guys can make up for a lot of mistakes and things like that. But, yeah, you know, Belichick and Saban, Kirby Smart, you know, those are some good dudes.
Gotcha, man. So just give me, like, I know you, like, just give me some defenses that you just like of all time. Like, you know, man, what is your favorite defenses to watch? It could be, like, the 2000 Ravens, 2006 Bears, like, what, Kings. Like, just give me your favorite defenses that you just – every time you look at Fang, like, man, this is what I'm trying to build.
Yeah. So I actually put it on Twitter, like, last week, you know, what was, like, your favorite, like, DB, collective DB unit?
I saw that.
Yeah. That Texas team, man, they were just so good.
Oh, the 2005 team?
Yeah. Michael Huff and Michael Griffin, you know, they were just so good. Aaron Ross was out there. They were just so good.
I think Derrick Johnson was still there, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, like they were loaded, man. It was ridiculous. And then you got that 2011 LSU team. Ridiculous, you know, just ridiculous with that. Obviously, you know, everybody talks about the Hurricanes back in the 2000s.
I was ready to say, don't forget about that old one.
Yeah, Kane.
DJ Williams, Vince Wilfork, Kevin Williams, like, I go on and on.
Yeah, man. They had that thing rolling. Antro Roll and Phillip Buchanan.
Mike Brump, like.
Yeah, man. They had that thing rolling back in the day. And then, obviously, Alabama. I think it was like
you could pick
any one of them. Yeah, you could pick any one.
10 with what's the name in all the Moses and Hightower. You got 13. and they got so many you can pick from. So yeah.
Yeah. The one year where like the defense was scoring like more points than like most people offenses was like ridiculous. That I think they had Minkah Fitzpatrick that year.
I think that was 2017. Yeah.
Yeah, that year, man, you watch them dudes all day. And then, like I said, you know, being a Michigan fan, watching the Michigan, you know, under Don Brown was always good. And then surprisingly, those Iowa defenses, like here, you know, here lately, Iowa and Wisconsin, they usually have really good defenses. So I enjoy watching those guys as well.
Gotcha. Yeah. Hey, that's definitely some good ones right there. Just like what DBs you currently like in the NFL right now? Just give me your top 10 corners right now.
Patrick Surtain. He's gonna be my number one. Yeah. It depends on what day you catch me. I'll put it to you like this. Ramsey is number one now, but Surtain's gonna take it. Surtain's the next great one in the league.
You got two out there, and who else?
Tre'Davious White.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Tre'Davious White is underrated.
Yes, sir.
Xavier Howard.
Oh, another one.
Yeah. Depending on who you are, I'm a Cowboy fan too. So depending on who you are, some people might think he's trash. I think, you know, his skill set is, you know, very high risk, high reward with, you know, Trayvon Diggs.
Yeah, he had 11 picks, so you gotta put him up there. Everybody don't get 11 picks.
Yeah, you know,
I'm a Raven fan, so I hope you say this guy next on this list.
Marlon Humphrey gonna be on there for sure.
Yes.
Marlon Humphrey's gonna be on there. The thing with Trayvon Diggs is, you know, people talk about all the yards he gave up and all that stuff, but
shoot, yeah,
he didn't give up but like 5 touchdowns or something like that. And at the end of the day, you know,
something crazy like that, yeah.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's all about, you know, yeah, you're gonna give up yards, especially with his style of play, but how many TDs you giving up? So, you know, he wasn't giving up too many of those. The Alexander boy from Green Bay.
He's
filth. You know, that dude the strap.
That's 7, I think, right there. That's 7.
Yeah. Shoot. I don't know if I got any more, honestly. Corners.
No Gilmore's of the world like that, Stephon Gilmore.
I'd be interested to see how he does. You know, I'd be interested to see he down there with Carolina or the Colts.
He's with Carolina.
Yeah, he's in Indianapolis. Yeah, I'd be interested to see. Obviously, you know, if I'm not mistaken, he was hurt or he was coming late off an injury or something last year. So, you know, really can't include him like you want to, but when he's healthy, yeah, he's one of the best. He's one of the best.
What about is J.C. Jackson in there?
Not as much of a fan.
Okay, well, I know. And then what about Byron Jones? Like I said, you're a Cowboy fan. I know you got to give him his credit.
Yeah. Byron Jones is pretty good. Yeah, he's pretty good. I don't get to watch him as much as I would like to now that he's down in Miami and things like that. But my head coach did an internship down there a month or two ago, and he was like, "Dude's just freaky." He was like, he's just freaky athletic, you know, stuff that at his height, and he was like, he just shouldn't be doing the stuff that he do. But, you know.
I'll give you my top 10. I go Ramsey. I go Jair Alexander. Marlon Humphrey, Tre'Davious White. Marshawn Lattimore, Saints.
Yeah.
But we can go J.C. Jackson, Stephon Gilmore, Trayvon Diggs, your guy. We can go Marcus Peters. Number 10. This is tricky. I'm going to go Patrick Surtain Jr.
Yeah.
So this is our last subject. So give me your thoughts on NIL. You know, just give me what you think the pros and cons can be for it.
Yeah, the cons is there's no cap on it, so you know, is really like the Wild Wild West. And, you know, I see people talking on Twitter and Facebook and everything like that. And it's kind of like, you love the fact that we live in a open and free market as a country. You know, we're living in a capitalistic society, but then you don't want these kids to go make their money. Is it the fact that they're 18? Shoot, now I know Texas is allowing it at the high school level. So is it now that you got, you know, high school kids and kids that's 18, 19, 20 making more money than you? You know, personally, is that the problem? You don't like seeing these young kids having this kind of money? Which is, you know, it's an oxymoron. You can't like being in a capitalistic society and then wanting to limit these kids on how much money they can make. You know, so personally, I'm a fan of it. Like I said, I think there's got to be a cap at some, which I believe will come at some point. But, you know, in terms of the haves and the haves not was already there, you know,
it's just now it's now you can do it without getting sanctioned.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, a school like Toledo, a school like Toledo could never match up with a school like SMU, you know, when it came to, you know, those schools, there was always that fine line of the haves and the have not. Now I think some more of the have nots have been able to kind of catch up with some of the haves. You know, I always look at a school like SMU. SMU's in Dallas. Dallas is one of the richest cities in one of the richest states in the country. And so now a school like that, they're like, shoot, we game on now. Like, we got the bread to spend. We can do it. We can go match Alabama or LSU, you know, things like that. You know, those bigger schools, they always got the boosters that got money. But, you know, we all know, like, some pockets is deeper than others. And that Texas oil money and, you know, that Texas investment money and finance money is deeper than some of the SEC school money. You know, like, it just is what it is. So personally, like I said, I'm a fan of it. Like I said, I think that there needs to be a cap at some point. But, you know, again, the haves and the have-nots was already there, whether it was facilities or, you know, things like that, things along those lines. It was already there. Now it's just, you know, now you can just pay people. So.
Gotcha. Definitely. So, like you said, because Texas A&M, like, I know Nick Saban said, like, man, he got getting paid now. I said, bro, I said, Tua came from Hawaii to come play for Alabama. He ain't just brother. He's off the strength of his, just the kindness of his heart. So,
yeah, you know, I think, you know, you're banking on winning games and championships, which Alabama can do. You know, they can do that. But, you know, not everybody kind of got that luxury. You know, not everybody got that luxury. So, you know, I think it evens the playing field. And shoot, some of the haves, now they're starting to fall down because, you know, they don't have the pockets like everybody else.
You're right, Coach, man. Definitely, man. This was fun, man. I'm glad you took time to chop it up with me, man. So, like I said, I would love to have you on again during the football season. We can, like, you know, just talk about the game and stuff like that. But just tell everybody a little bit about Bluefield University, and just give a message to the kids that might not have all the grades to go toward D1 or quote unquote Power 5, and why they should come check out a Bluefield State or Wheeling University, those colleges that, you know, might not get the pub as everybody else.
Yeah, you know, I think you know, Bluefield State we're a D2 HBCU here in West Virginia. You know, we're going into our second year as a football program. Our head coach is Tony Coxum. You know, what we got going on is we got a great staff. I'm 33 years old and I'm the third oldest on the staff. You know, my head coach is 45. So, you know, we got a lot of, you know, life lessons and experiences that we can share with our young men. You know, for the parents, you know, you're going to be able to send your son to us and feel comfortable with it. You know, we're, like I said, we're still, you know, in the baby phases of what we're trying to do, but you know, we really got a really good thing going on here with the staff and our head coach. And, you know, when your school president is in love with football, not as much as basketball, but he's in love with football, then you really got, you know, that's what you want, having the administration on your side. And so, yeah, you know, in terms of guys that are coming out, you know, the transfer portal and JUCOs, you know, what the young kids need to understand is that for a lot of coaches, they are in a very much of a win now type of mode. So they don't necessarily have time to kind of wait on a freshman to get it together unless that freshman is ready to go right now. And so I know, and it happened when I came through with, you know, guys that are, you know, chasing the logos, you know, things like that. And I'm a big proponent of, you know, like, especially like with the camps, you know, like go to a big camp to see how you match up. Like, don't let the pictures and tour fool you.
You're not the only 5-star. It's 500 or 1,000 kids just as good or better.
Yeah. And, you know, shoot, some kids, they don't even realize, because I've seen it and talking to other coaches, like the prospect camps, like, yeah, they might got different colored shirts on or whatever because of your year, but you in the indoor facility doing drills and stuff like that. But the high level guys, the guys that they want to offer or already offered, they outside on another field, you know, they out there getting the real work in. So for upcoming guys, you know, got to take care of your grades first and foremost. You know, if you ain't got the grades, then we ain't got nothing to talk about, you know.
I love that.
So, yeah, but, you know, in my eyes, and I got this from one of my mentors, Antonio King. He was running backs coach at North Carolina Central. Now he's coaching high school ball back down in the Raleigh area. He said every kid got to go to a big school camp. Every kid got to go to a D2 camp. Every kid got to go to a D3 camp. Because that right there will tell you, all right, I can play with these kids, or this kid is, you know, 6'2 and 230 and can do everything I do at 5'11 and 240. You know, that's where you kind of get your gauges, all right, on what levels that you can play at, and be open to everything. Be open to every offer that comes your way, because you won torn ACL away, or you won firing away, or you won hiring away. I know I was at a D3 school in Pennsylvania, and kids was blowing me off, and then I get to a D2 school. Hey, coach, what's going on? Boom, boom. Like, yeah, I ain't forget that stuff. You know, you blew me off not but 3 weeks ago, you know. So every coach that entertains you, you know, either, hey, coach, I'm just not interested at this particular moment, or, you know, entertainment. You'll never know.
I agree, man. Thanks again, Coach Robinson, man. So before you get off, I got to ask for a small favor. I'm trying to get your offensive coordinator on here. So you think you can make that happen for me?
Coach AR or Coach Austin?
Whoever, whichever one. I mean, y'all got two OCs?
My co-OC is Coach Austin.
Matter of fact, let's get them both. I can even get them together. Yeah. One at a time. It don't matter. I want them both.
Yeah, we can get Coach Austin for sure. I'll call him right after this. And then my Coach AR, yeah, you know, shoot. I talked to him earlier today. He was like, all right, dude, I'm probably getting ready to hit the beach real quick. He from California, so he trying to get his tan and all that other kind of stuff. But I'll hit them dudes up, and we can make it happen, no question.
Definitely appreciate that, Coach. You want to say anything to the people before you get off?
Nah, man, just, you know, season's coming around. So, you know, for anyone that's getting ready to go into playing football, you know, just make sure that you're hydrating, make sure that you're getting in shape, you know, all of those kind of things. Be coachable. You know, be willing to play any spot that's needed for you. You know, the best way to get on the field is being able to play multiple positions. You know, take care of your grades, whether you're in college or, you know, in high school or middle school. You know, we lost some kids this year to grades that, you know, they were probably going to be starters, you know. So that's just the name of the game. Realize that college football is a business, and, you know, hey, keep your eyes on Big Blue this year. We feel like we got some really good things cooking this year. So, you know, definitely keep your eyes on us and hit us up.
Thanks again, Coach Robinson, man. Everybody, that's it for episode 186. Y'all can check this out on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all that good stuff like that. Well, everyone, be great on your way to the figure eight, and always, I mean always, remember the hashtag KTSC. Keep that same energy from your host, Justin V, and my special guest of Bluefield State defensive coordinator, Coach Lauren Robinson. Guys, enjoy your Friday. Have a safe weekend. I love you guys, and I'll be back Monday.